We're breaking down the conference title games. How should the Patriots attack Mahomes this time around? Can that KC defense stay hot at home? And why the NFC title game will come down to the performances of superstars Michael Thomas and Aaron Donald. Plus, we're talking Gase to the Jets, Brian Flores to Miami, and the QB future of the Bengals under Zach Taylor. Plus a mailbag. It's all on the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are coming up on the conference championship games. Three games to go, two of the big ones coming up on Sunday, and we're going to deep dive those games as well as talk about the last three coach hirings and take some of your questions to the mailbag at the end of the show. But Andy, we talked about it a little bit on Monday. This is going to be definitely more fun than last weekend. I'll say that. I'll put it out there. I'll put that take out there. But we have two rematches, and we have two rematches of really good first games.
Absolutely. Shootouts that took place mid-season, so these teams are a little bit different than when they last saw each other. And the other thing, Gary, is I'm at home this week. I'm not going to the Senior Bowl till the day after, so I am not watching this on that guy's DVR who I found on Craigslist out in Robertsdale, Alabama, where I go every year to watch the championship games. By myself, I rent his place.
So do you? I was going to say, do you go to the same guy every year?
Yes.
So this is a guy you found on Craigslist back in the day because you needed to watch the championship games while you were in Mobile, but you have to watch it DVR style.
Correct. And I found him in 2013, I want to say. And I've gone there, I think, every year. And his daughter had just been born when I went there. I think I've told this. So every year I get like a one-year snapshot of the growth of this girl. And he emailed me, hey, you coming this year? I told him, sorry, I'm not. But he said, we just had a new daughter, a new baby girl. Oh, so we could have started the whole thing all over again. Yeah. Yeah. No, I said congratulations. But He's been great to me. He watches the games out in a different room, and he's never given any kind of spoiler at all. And I go on nature hikes in between games. I went to the ocean one time down in the Gulf. I just spend the day trying to hear nothing, waiting for the games to start. But now I'll do that here at home in Boise, and then I'll go to Mobile the next day.
I just have one quick question before we get into the games here. Does the family, like, acknowledge you, or is it kind of like you go in there and you sort of are like, you know, some sort of secretive fixer type of character, and you just sort of do your thing and everyone stays out of your way?
Depends if the game's going or not. If the game's going, it's they stay out of the way. If the game is not going, like I'm just walking in or, we're in between, then they do acknowledge me. Yeah, I've gotten to know, I forget his wife's name. I would recognize her if I saw her. I've gotten to know him very well. His first name's Mark. I don't know if he wants his whole name out there, but yeah. I will miss going out there. There's nothing in this town. The only thing that's open is a Little Caesars. And the first year I had Little Caesars, I thought, this is amazing. How do they sell this for $5, the best pizza I've ever had? I don't know what got into me, because then the next year it was like, oh, that's how they sell it for $5. But that's all I had.
Yeah.
It's the only option.
That's a football life right there.
I would not want that to run with the other football lives. Do not, please put that on a different channel if you ever run that. Don't put that back with Matt Millens or Jerome Bettis or someone like that.
I appreciate the fact that this has become such a matter-of-fact conversation, a part of your life. Like, yeah, I just go to some stranger's house I found on Craigslist, and he lets me watch football on his DVR during conference championship weekend.
And you're from
the other side of the country. It's such a nice, a feel-good story.
Well, and because when he, when we were trying to vet each other, like, okay, it's Craigslist, we both know the dangers of that, how do we vet each other, neither of us did a good job. He sent me a link to the to the school that he worked for, which that could have been anybody sending any link, and then I sent him a link to my writing at SI, and that could have been anybody sending that link as well. But we decided, the hell with it, that's fine, it's good enough, we'll be fine. But the most proud I ever was I had an NFL head coach last year say to me, hey, I heard you once went to some guy's house out in the country to watch a championship games. And I thought, oh, good. This is now I'm a unique kind of off the wall guy. And I'll give you, who would you guess of the head? And I haven't talked to many coaches about it, but the one head coach, you know, I gave a clue. He's a head coach. Who do you think teased me the most about the riskiness of Craigslist football watching?
Oh, it would have to be an offensive coach.
Nope. No, defensive.
No?
Don't you think a defensive coach would tease you more than an offensive coach would?
Well, I would think an offensive coach would be more aware of the risks of Craigslist. I don't know why I think that. I'll say it has to be a younger guy. I'll say Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, nope. I could tell right away you're never going to get it. It was Marvin Lewis.
Oh.
He had his assistant sitting around him, though, and he was in charge. You know, he's head coach, so I think he kind of felt like there was a liberty to really pour it on.
Well, I hope he phrased it as, I heard you once went out to watch a football game in the guy's house, and you could correct him by saying, you heard incorrectly, I go out there every year.
Yeah.
All right, let's get
it. It was the first year. Yeah, let's do the show. Let's do the show now.
The games. We have deep dived Andy's conference championship game watching habits, but let's talk about the actual matchups here. We are going to start with a late game that is the Patriots at the Chiefs, where it is apparently going to be very cold. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I have a very general question to start for you, Andy. Who had...
Is it about where I watch the games? Because I'm going to watch this at home. Okay, sorry.
we covered that, remember? Who had the best approach to Patrick Mahomes this year? Who defended him the best?
That's a good question. Can we treat the question as who defended the Chiefs' offense the best? Because defending,
yeah.
This is why Mahomes is going to be the MVP. Defending the Chiefs' offense and defending Patrick Mahomes are almost two different things, which is why they're so hard to stop. There's Mahomes who runs the offense, and that is probably MVP caliber right there. And then there's the Mahomes that beats you after you beat his offense, the second play, second reaction Mahomes. I want to say the team that handled Kansas City the best, I think Baltimore gave them a lot of trouble, but Mahomes ultimately beat them with those second reaction plays. Mm-hmm. So that would be my answer off the top of my head. To kind of bring it to New England, I think that first half where they faced Mahomes, remember, they were up, what were they up, like 24-9 at one point in that game? They jumped on Kansas City in the first half. If we could isolate it to just that half of football, New England gave Kansas City and Mahomes a lot of trouble back in week 6. It's the teams that are showing him a bunch of different things. Those are the teams that have the best shot at it, but we learned our lesson early in the year. Remember, we thought the Steelers might get Mahomes to trip up in week 3 because they would show him a lot, and he's only seen simple defenses, and he wound up just destroying that defense. So you've got to be a little bit complex and aggressive, I think, to have your best chance, but that doesn't guarantee you success against Mahomes.
Do you expect the Patriots to basically put everyone up on the line of scrimmage and give him that look again? And if so, do you expect them to come after him a little more often?
I think you have to diversify your fronts against him. Why not? Why wouldn't you? It's part of your system in New England. You've got versatile guys, Kyle Van Noy, Trey Flowers, men that can move around. Hightower's another one of them. So you might as well use that as part of your foundation. I wrote about this early in the week, which is I suspect why we're talking about it, is do you blitz Mahomes and try to make him play on your schedule? If you do blitz him, you have to keep him in the pocket, though. You can't send bodies after him and then let him get outside the pocket, because now you're way too weak downfield, and some of those otherworldly completions to Hill, don't you see that? You can see those going for a touchdown rather than just 30 or 40 yards. So I don't know. What would you do if you were New England, Gary, knowing that you really don't have – you don't have great pass rushers, but I bet you have guys that you think can keep him in the pocket, can at least contain the edges. You're not going to get around the edge, but maybe they can contain the edge.
I think I'd come after him. And I guess that's just a basic instinct to want to be the aggressor in this case and not to sit back and assume that you are going to, quote-unquote, contain this offense because you didn't – I mean, this offense has pulled out – huge plays against defenses that very much just tried to contain them. I think you have to take it to him. I think you have to force his hand a little bit. And I do wonder between the I don't want to overstate the knee injury. I don't know something that people don't know. I just think it was banged up last week enough that he was limping pretty severely. And I think when you put that on top of the fact that your body just functions a little bit differently in the cold weather, I think you can come after him and have a better chance of holding them in check.
In that cold weather, you alluded to that. Normally, that's something I would dismiss. It's the same for everybody, which it is. When the weather gets that cold, though, when it's 20 degrees is one thing. Teens and zero and sub-zero, I don't know what the wind chill will be, but we're talking single-digit temperatures now. Mm-hmm. That impacts the speed and quickness, guys, a little bit more. So let's say that takes 10% off of the oomph that you get with Tyreek Hill and with Sammy Watkins. I think the weather will neutralize things a little bit to level the field in favor of New England. I'm not saying New England wins, but I think this helps them more than the Chiefs.
I think there's also something to be said for you can blitz and then you can get a little bit grabby downfield. I think you get away with a little more of that in January than you would in maybe an early season game because obviously the officials don't want to throw 10,000 flags.
Well, if they don't want to, their hands are probably in their pockets when they're watching, so they don't want to have to,
exactly.
They don't have to move and get cold.
They don't even want to turn their head to look at things. I should mention real quick because Reed Foster, our wonderful researcher, just sent this note and referring to the cold weather here. I guess Bill Simmons had talked about it. He's a Boston blogger who also has a podcast. But they were talking about over-unders. Basically, are there more or less points scored in games where the weather is super cold? And look, this is basically over-unders are set by public perception. So this is not an exact science as to how much the weather hinders offenses in the extreme cold. But games tend to go over the total when you get under 30 degrees and under 20 degrees. That was an article that the Action Network guys put together. John Ewing had written that and put together that table. So there's something to be said for
scoring. Does that mean they're higher scoring games?
It means they're higher scoring than people expect they will be. So that's part.
People expect lower scoring then.
Exactly.
If it's
cold. So basically the point of that stat is and he sent this is going back to 2003. This is less than 30 degrees. 58.8% of the time it goes over. Less than 20 degrees. 20 and 24. 53.8%. So basically, people would generally expect less scoring in the cold weather games, but in fact they are basically overreacting to the cold weather. Mm-hmm. I guess is what it would be.
Okay. Well, the other thing to keep in mind, if these teams, and we'll probably get into this concept with if we're just talking over-under. I don't know how you're making this your Friday show here, but you're wanting to double dip, so that's fine. You can play this section again. This will be a factor in the Rams-Saints as well. Sometimes when you get two really good, proficient offenses, the clock keeps moving because there's no incompletions and the runs are efficient. They get, there's just a tempo to the game. So you could see that effect too a little bit. I remember I learned that lesson when the Chiefs played the Colts in the playoffs years ago. I was in college. It was a long time ago. Well, 12 years ago or so. And they both came in with high-powered offenses. And I don't think either team punted the whole day. But the score was only like 35-28. Yeah. It was something like that because both teams just kept marching up and down the field.
Yep.
That's the interesting thing about last week's games, by the way, Gary. I've been going back and just watching them on film. Is there weren't a lot of big swing plays in those games. There weren't 80-yard touchdowns or pick sixes or fumbles in bad spots on the field. It was pretty straightforward football last week. And if you get that again, I guess I hope we get that again because I like to see it usually as a sign of how the better team wins.
No, look, there were a lot of people who reacted to our Monday podcast and our talk about how the Saints had dominated the second half of the game, which they absolutely did. There's no way you can say they didn't. A lot of people said, oh, they only scored 10 points. It's like, well, they scored 10 points because they they had an 18-play drive where they just picked up 8-yard chunks on every play, and then they also missed a field goal, and obviously they ended up taking a knee at the end of the game. But I mean, that was dominance. I know it was only 10 points, but that was a defense that could not stop an offense in the second half of the game. Not to mention what the Eagles' offense was struggling to do.
I have a question for you about these quarterbacks too. Let's say, and maybe it's not that hard of a question considering how good Mahomes has been. I was going to ask you if you could play with one of these guys for the next 3 years with what they are right now, which one would you want to play with?
Oh, 3 years? You'd have to take Mahomes. I was just going to say 2019, who would you rather have?
And I think you would also rather have him. You take Mahomes then too?
The only reason you'd maybe say Brady, I just Mahomes, and we saw it in that Baltimore game. Mahomes can single-handedly win games like no other quarterback can right now. I guess you could argue how much of that is the fact that he has Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, which obviously is a very big help to what he does. Yeah, I think I'd still take Mahomes. I just. And that's, to me, a lot of the whole, Belichick versus Andy Reid and look at the opener, the opener last year when the Chiefs went into Foxborough and stunned the Patriots and Reid got the better of Belichick. And these are two guys who have been around for a long time. I think it's a completely different team with Patrick Mahomes. I think you throw everything out. Andy Reid has never had a quarterback like this. I honestly don't think many coaches have ever had a quarterback like this, but Reid especially.
The one thing that's going to be really interesting to watch with Mahomes as his career unfolds is how he walks that fine line between playing with discipline and playing with playmaking, sandlot playmaking mindset, because it's easy for those uber gifted sandlot players to become undisciplined quarterbacks and build bad habits. And Aaron Rodgers is the greatest example. Aaron Rodgers is better early in his career than he is lately, and he's not washing up physically. He just played with more discipline early on. And Mahomes, you see him waver at that a little bit at times where he's not always as buttoned up as he could be, which is to be totally expected. And I don't think anybody would be as buttoned up as they could be if they had that kind of amazing playmaking prowess. But I'm eager to see how he develops and how Andy Reid massages that. Because I guarantee you, Andy Reid's not going to just say, Patrick, go win us the games. He's going to train him like a quarterback. And look at these QBs that have aged so well. Roethlisberger's such an outlier, but even he's an example. His career extended because he became an efficient on-schedule quarterback from the pocket. That's how Phillip Rivers plays. That's how Breeze plays. That's how Brady plays. I think there's something to that. There's a connection to that longevity. And we'll see. Patrick Mahomes doesn't have to play like that right now, but he does more than he realizes, I bet. He as good as he is, I bet he's got some things to learn. If you asked Reed in an honest moment about Mahomes being a field general.
Yeah, look, I would not be surprised if he had a 20 interception year. Just a year where a couple of bad bounces and it swings that way. I mean, he had 12 this year. But again, the reward far outweighs the risk with the turnovers. I just want to mention one more thing before we go to the Patriots offense versus Chiefs defense side of the ball here. I do remember, and this isn't a one-to-one comparison. I do remember when the Patriots beat the Steelers in the AFC title game, Ben Roethlisberger's rookie year. I might have been a huge Steelers fan at the time, and it might have completely devastated me. But after they had the lead, the Patriots went a bunch of series where they rushed zero. They just dropped everyone back and just let Roethlisberger sort of pat the ball behind the line of scrimmage and run around a little bit, and then eventually run for 8 yards, and they just ran the clock down that way.
That's interesting. I think more teams. I had that conversation last year after the Stephon Diggs play against the Saints. Why don't more teams just rush two or one? That's interesting. I wonder if they would do that, because I mean, I don't think they'd rush zero, but like maybe they'd rush two or three and then spy Mahomes with two guys.
Yeah.
The thing about quarterback spying, we think it's a way to just run around and go where he goes. And that's, yeah, you do that. But the reason you do that is because you're that consistently puts you in the passing lane. And then it also puts you in a premium pass rush position when he breaks the pocket. It's easier to go get him as a pass rusher when you're following him to begin with. So that someone's going to spy Mahomes, no matter what the Patriots do. Even if they're bringing pressure, I would imagine they're going to have some kind of extra eyes on Mahomes. And I thought it'd be Kyle Van Noy last time they played. I don't think it wound up being that as a prominent tactic in the game. But someone will have to do that. The hard part is they've got all that speed in the middle of the field, though, in Kansas City. So you can't just put Devin McCourty on Mahomes because Devin McCourty's got to help on Tyreek Hill. Or Kelsey, whoever's inside.
That is correct. Let's go up Patriots offense versus Chiefs defense here. We talked about the Chiefs defense and how they've been statistically just much better at home this year, and we don't have a great explanation for it, and I assume you to this day do not have a great explanation for it, Andy, so we'll sort of gloss over that. But what's, Patriots are a bit of a chameleon offensively. What's the best tack for going at this Chiefs defense? Are we going to see a lot of Sony Michel behind James Devlin and ram it down the throats that way? Is this a James White type of game? Is Rob Gronkowski a blocker like he was last week?
I think it's all the above. I think Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady, they go in there, they put on the film, they talk to the rest of the offense, and they say, you know what, Kansas City was great last week, and there's no arguing. They were great. And it wasn't just that they did one or two things well and they got hot. They changed up coverages throughout the game. They were explosive in man and zone. They just outplayed the Colts. Let's make them do it again, because once is once, and they've only done it once all season long, and we have a lot of answers on our offense, and I think the three things that you can see from New England that will be heavily featured is, one is throwing the ball out of 11 personnel, three receiver sets, which they did last week against the Chargers. That's where they're at their best still, and that's the James White. That's where he comes in. Yeah, I do think it's a James White game. Two, out of those three receiver sets, one thing they also did against the Chargers that was very successful is attack the inside linebackers with vertical routes and then throw underneath them. So, and the Chiefs, we know they're kind of a man defense, but their linebackers often play zone. Everybody else plays man, but the linebackers play zone. I think what you'll see is New England running guys down the middle of the field. Gronkowski will be a big focal point. And then somebody, think Edelman or whoever, Chris Hogan, running a shallow cross underneath it and getting these easy catches for 10 yards with 10 more yards to run after the catch. They did that again and again and again to the Chargers. And the neat thing is those plays unfold pretty quickly. Even though you're waiting on a crossing route, they unfold pretty quickly. So Justin Houston, D. Ford, who's probably the guy that scares you most. In fact, he's certainly the guy that scares you most. You can neutralize them a little bit, just like you neutralized Bosa and Ingram. And then the last thing we'll see is when they do put James Devlin on the field. He plays about a third of the snaps, I'm guessing. I'm guessing he will this game. It's what he's done this year, 28% this year. I bet it's around there. Pull blockers, gap scheme stuff, stuff that makes those linebackers, Ragland and Hitchens especially, have to read and move laterally. They are not good at that. And the Colts, as good as they are offensively, I didn't think they challenged the Chiefs a whole lot with their run cuts. They didn't have a chance to, in part, because they weren't on the field and then they were down. But you need to try to make those linebackers read something, because they're just not very good run defenders.
Oh, this is going to be a good one. Patriots have lost four of their last five true road games in the postseason. They haven't won one since it was the 2006 season, 2007 calendar year when they won at San Diego. But this is going to be really good. Let's go to the.
Are we picking? Are you? Are you?
Oh,
you
that's
sound
right.
Like you're picking Chiefs. I don't want to pick this week. I don't know. This week, I'm just guessing. I felt good about the wild card and divisional rounds, but I'd just be guessing. But I'm asking because it seems to me like you kind of are leaning Chiefs.
I honestly don't know.
I
would
show
not.
Here.
Exactly.
Good strong content.
It is. No, I really don't have a I don't have a great read on either of these games. I will. for the sake of picking, I kind of want to... My mind says Chiefs, my heart says Patriots. I'll go Chiefs. I've been talking up the young quarterbacks since the preseason, and I think maybe I'll just go with the two young guys this week for the sake of consistency. How's that?
That's terrible. That's weak and illogical, and but that's fine. I mean, that's fine. I'm in the same boat as you. I don't know who's. I think that's how they're going to play. We went over that. We went over how they'll do it for 20 minutes, but we don't know what that means for the outcome.
I thought you were about to unveil something amazing. Yeah, my heart says Patriots, but I'll pick Chiefs, and I'll stop saying my heart says Patriots because now I'm just being a coward. Chiefs in a blowout. How's that, Andy?
That's fine.
78-0. Let's go to the NFC game. Rams Saints. All right, here it is, Annie. Michael Thomas. How do they stop him? It was Marcus Peters following him last time, and it did not go well. What do they do this time?
It's somebody else following him this time. Marcus Peters could not guard Michael Thomas. And that was back in week 9. So Tlaib was out injured. The Rams, at that point, they were still toying with man coverage, which is part of the reason that Peters was following Thomas. I don't think they'd quite fully transitioned into being the zone defense that they've become now. They got some matchup elements to their zone, but they play, you've got to let Peters be free and have some leeway, because he's not, we just used the term buttoned up for how you quarterback. Peters is not a buttoned up cornerback. I would put Tlaib on Thomas, even though when Tlaib and Peters are in together, the Rams do not travel their corners hardly at all. Tlaib plays the left side, Peters plays the right side. The only time they move is if all the wide receivers are aligned on one side and there are no wide receivers on the other, then the corners will follow the receivers, and whichever guy has to cross the field will be the one who plays the slot. So that's they'll move them a little bit, but they're not matching them up. I would change that for this game, and I would match up Tlaib on Thomas and take my chances. Michael Thomas is almost... If you take him out of the game, New Orleans is a good offense at best. He is such a difference maker. And there were times last week where Philadelphia, and I don't think I've seen this all, certainly not this season. I don't think I've seen it hardly ever. They were rolling their safety out of cover 3 to Thomas. So they're playing single high zone.
Yeah.
But the single high defender is doubling Thomas. So they're playing zone with no help on certain parts of the field. I've never seen a team double team like that. And they didn't do it all game. They probably wish they had, though, because Thomas beat him anyway, no matter what they did. You've got to stop Michael Thomas. You can't let him have over 100 yards or you'll lose.
Well, that's kind of what we talked about on Monday. And if you're going to get beat by the Saints, make them beat you with Breeze throwing over the top. And that's kind of, look, if you make them, obviously Alvin Kamara's on the field too, you can use him. But if it's going to be Ted Ginn / Tre'Quan Smith, those are guys who, they're deep threat guys. They're guys who are going to beat you over the top. And it's easier said than done. But you gotta devote. I think you have to constantly devote a second defender to Michael Thomas, and like you said, just make it be anyone else.
The tricky part of that is the Saints know that that's how you feel, and so they put Kamara near Michael Thomas, and now it's hard to double because those are the two guys that scare you. And out of those two, the Rams last time, they chose to double Kamara more. But they were playing the man coverage. You had LaMarcus Joyner down on him. With the way those Ram linebackers are playing right now, Barron and Littleton, who they're both very fast. They're operating fast. They look comfortable. And then Joyner being as fast as he is, I play zone and take my chances that we can contest with Kamara and just contain him. We can't give up the 70-yard touchdown that we did to him in the regular season last year, but we can live with him getting 10 catches for 70 yards total. That's what I do. I play zone. I keep in front of me. I make the Saints sustain drives. It's hard. The more I think about this offense, they're not dependent on big plays.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the Saints did last time. They had sustained offense. Obviously, they had the 72-yard touchdown to Michael Thomas to seal the game. But before that, I mean, they had put 38 points on the board midway through the fourth quarter, and it was it was that. It was a lot of sustained offense.
Aaron Donald, that's the one saving grace for you. Is and the Saints are the one of the few teams that have guys that can contest with him. I like their guards, Warford and Pete. Now, Andres Pete struggled last week, and as I think you mentioned earlier to me today, he's pointed out he's got that wrist injury and the surgery after the season. It was his footwork that was the problem against Fletcher Cox at times last week. But Aaron Donald, if you can get interior pressure on Drew Brees, that changes the equation, because Brees does not have the arm to push the ball downfield if he does not have the pocket to step up into. But that's a big if. I mean, this team just kept Fletcher Cox in check last week. And I know Cox was not 100%, but Cox still looked like Fletcher Cox on film. The Saints just played very well.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I was watching Andres Pete last week, and I just sort of made a mental note like, oh, he didn't look very good. He had an off day. He just sort of looked out of sorts. And then the report had come out early in the week that he did have surgery on his hand and was probably playing in just a tremendous amount of pain, which would explain a lot of that. And the opportunities there. There are so many things in this game where you just say, well, it's a 55-45 type of ratio that this happens, and if it happens, that swings the game. Aaron Donald, if he's utterly dominant, if he's top-end dominant like Aaron Donald is in probably half his games, yeah, Rams can keep these guys in check.
The more I think about it, if you're the Rams, you have to get some big plays, which everybody wants to do every game. I know that. But like in this case, I think that has to be – I think you're reliant on it. We need to generate big plays. And then the question is, well, what's the best way to do that? And some teams feel like we talked about with Belichick going after Mahomes in the previous segment. You go after the QB, try to give him to play on your schedule. My guess is the Rams will say, no, what you do is you pay your $100 million defensive tackle and you trust him to be a $100 million defensive tackle, and you keep your fast zone defenders behind him and have them be ball hawks. And that's what Tlaib was. Remember, Tlaib and Peters are ball hawks, and Brees does not have a lot of juice throwing outside right now. So if you can contain the middle of the field, which is where Thomas hurt you, by the way, those slant patterns, if you have an answer for that and you've got Aaron Donald and you've got off coverage playmaking corners, you've got a chance against Drew Brees. And I bet they're going to do that. I bet the Rams will just fit to their profile and play zone coverage.
All right, other side of the ball here. We saw the Rams very much get back on track last week and look like they did in September and October. Obviously, they had a fine performance. They played from behind last time they were in New Orleans, but they ended up putting up their 35 points. They did have this game tied in the fourth quarter at one point. But is there a specific way you think the Rams attack the Saints' defense? It's obviously been a defense that's played well against the run. They did... The Rams threw it all over them last time.
And I think they do that again. I would go play action aggressively early for two reasons. One is those linebackers are fast downhill hitters. DeMario Davis and then Alex Anzalone, who will be on the field a lot because that's who plays when you go into three receiver sets. He's the Saints' nickel linebacker. He's a fast player. He's in his second year. He didn't play much his rookie year due to injury. So this is a big new stage for him. I would trust that, okay, there's going to be the linebackers going fast, all that crowd noise early on. These guys are going to be amped up, and we're the best play-action team in the NFL. We're going to go play-action hard after these guys early, and that's going to do two things. One, I think we'll get some 20-yard completions off of it, and two is we soften their run defense for later, and then we can see if we can rely on our running game to at least an extent of the degree that we did last week against Dallas. I don't know if they can do that again, not against the league's number two ranked run D, but Gary, you know who, by the way, who stood out on film as the most dominant guy on the field for the Rams in that performance last week?
I would have said John Sullivan.
You would have been exactly right. John Sullivan played as well in that game as any center I've seen play all year long, and I don't know where that came from, because John Sullivan is, I think a lot about
good.
Him. I don't
he's
think
a good veteran guy.
I've never thought physical freak. And that's what he played like. He just, his hands, he absolutely humiliated Malik Collins and Antoine Woods. I don't know if he can do can you count on that again or not? That's a lot to ask of him. And those Saints D linemen, and actually the other thing that's interesting is in that Eagles Saints, once you put on the film and start watching the end zone angle, what defined the game for New Orleans was the play of their interior defensive linemen. Tyler Davison at nose tackle was outstanding. David Onyemata played well coming in even after Rankins went down, and even Taylor Stallworth, a really oversized undrafted rookie for him, he made some plays. So it's strength on strength there, and I would find out in the second quarter if we can win with strength on strength to find the Rams. First quarter, I'm going to try to soften everything with play action.
Okay. All right. Yeah, Sheldon Rankins out for this one, went down in the Eagles game. So, Andy, who do you like?
Oh, yeah. Probably go Saints, home team. Do we yeah. think the home field matters? How much do we think it matters?
I think it matters with the Saints. Again, it's and that's homework we have to do this upcoming offseason is really drilling down what home field advantage means and why it's an advantage. Because everyone has theories, but there's no real definitive way to say it probably is in the end a cornucopia of factors that that lead to home field advantage. But I said earlier I'd take the young quarterback, so I already locked myself into the Rams. But I also think the Saints,
because you like
win.
Goff over Breeze.
How's that?
That's your reason.
that's it. I said it earlier. Now I have to stick to my guns.
Well, what if I told you that number three quarterback slash everyman utility weapon Taysom Hill is, I guess he's actually not young, is he?
He
went
not
to BYU, so he's 28 years old. Never mind, he's not young either. Yeah. Sean Mannion's younger than him. All right, so you're going with the Rams.
Yeah, for no reason. I'm not picking either of these games. That's what I'll come down to. I will say Rams and Chiefs, but I don't.
How about
believe
this?
It.
Can you win it? If you score under 30, can is it possible to win either of these games?
I mean, that's yeah. I mean, yes. The Arrowhead game, the Chiefs Patriots game, I thought was going to be low scoring even before all the weather stuff started coming out. This game, you'd say probably not. But look, like we said, if Aaron Donald takes over this game, I mean, that's a recipe for breaking the Saints. And we saw that they had that stretch this year, where they just didn't put up points for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So who are you picking? You don't back off this. You picked Saints. You sort of suggested Saints, but I don't think you definitively picked it.
I'll pick Rams. But this is dumb. This is stupid and out. Nobody cares who we're picking right now. We're obviously just pulling it out of thin air. Let's just get to the next segment. I'm sorry I brought it. It's my fault. I'm the one that brought it
up
this week.
I know. We could have gotten away without it. But
we were doing
honestly,
it for the other games, so I thought, well, previous weeks we did it. We might as well now. But this, no.
Look,
this is why you run the show and I just talk back when you talk.
Previous weeks you could go through it and say, you know, here's an edge. I think this team is better than this other team. This team matches up well with this other team for reasons A, B, and C. And when you talk about this game, when you talk about these games, it's going to come down to, you know, does Aaron Donald play his peak dominance? Does Patrick Mahomes make three out of structure, out of his mind plays to swing that game? Yeah, I mean, that's it. There's no real good answer to who's going to win. I think they're both ties. I think all four teams will go to the Super Bowl.
There you go. There you go.
Let's talk about coaches. We had talked about the first five coaches, coach hirings on previous shows. Let's talk about the last three. We haven't had a chance to get to them yet. Let's start with Adam Gase to the Jets. Gase, Darnold,
Marriage. Like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
I do too.
I like it for the reason that Gase said he liked it. He's getting a young quarterback. He's getting to mold one from the ground up.
It is funny. And look, I know there were some player relationship problems with Gase and the locker room in Miami, and that's why that sort of had become an untenable situation. Gase leaves Miami, and everyone says, oh, look at the offensive ranks. Oh, what a bad team or what a bad coaching job. And now Brian Flores goes there, and everyone's saying, oh, Brian Flores, real rebuilding process coming up here because they have a terrible roster. And it's like, well, you just fired the guy who who went to the playoffs 3 years ago with Matt Moore and Ryan Tannehill, and he won seven games with Brock Osweiler and Tannehill this year. It's just, I guess my point is people are just, I feel like they don't think about things before they speak out loud, maybe like I'm doing right now.
Yeah, like we did on the picks back there.
There you go.
I like that Greg Williams at D coordinator. That'll be an interesting. I think they've got the guys to do what he wants to do.
Yeah,
I don't. I like that he has. Really, what I'm saying is, I like that he has Jamal Adams. Greg Williams mm-hmm. asks his players to do so many different things, and I go back and forth on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm down on the idea more this year than I've ever been because I don't think these defenses improved a lot over the. Like, I look at like Green Bay's defense with Mike Pettine, and they have a bunch of DBs, and they all play everywhere. And you go, oh wow, look how versatile they are. Well, look how average to subpar they are, too. It's like they all play everywhere, but none of them are very good at any of the spots they play. I get that sense sometimes watching a Greg Williams defense. As he asks, he does a lot of stuff. But
yeah,
maybe he's got the guys. I don't know.
Let me play devil's advocate for a moment because I'm kind of on board with you, but I'm not totally on board because we talked about Dallas and Indianapolis and the simplicity of what they do, and that allows their guys to play faster. But those two teams just got they got it handed to them in the last round by really well-coached offenses. So I guess you could kind of say, well, what's your ceiling at this point? And if you want to be I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think we'd probably both agree that the Ravens were probably our favorite defense this year. For what they were capable of doing and the different things they were capable of doing. I think that's what you want. And I think basically you just need veteran guys to be able to do it. And I wonder if the Jets players, the Jamal Adamses, they signed a couple of veterans the last couple of years. I wonder if they're reaching a point where you can start to build a foundation like that. Not that they're going to be the Ravens next year, but you can start to pile a lot on, and then let's see what happens.
The Ravens, it all starts at safety for them with Weddle and Tony Jefferson. And Weddle's the guy, and Jefferson has learned to be the and we're talking the guy as far as schematic diversity. And Jefferson, who did some of that stuff, actually did it quite well in Arizona. He followed along. If you've got the safeties to do it, that's fine, but you need to have Adams. Adams is really dynamic, and he's really good. My guess is he's going to be fine doing it. He's a pretty smart football player. I don't see Eric Weddle in him quite yet. I don't know if he's quite there yet.
Yeah.
And my concern is I don't think Greg Williams cares about that. I think Greg Williams is going to say, I need an Eric Weddle, so go be Eric Weddle. And I don't know how well that works.
Okay. That's fair enough. I think it'll be interesting, and I think it'll be well, maybe not fun if it doesn't go well, but I think it'll be interesting to see how Jamal Adams responds to that sort of workload that's going to be dumped on him here. Brian Flores to Miami. I guess we don't have a great read on this. He obviously can't be officially hired until the Patriots season is over, and therefore we don't know who the offensive coordinator is going to be, which obviously will be a big hire for him, but... yeah, another Belichick staffer staying in the AFC East.
And they do have some rebuilding to do. They have to get a quarterback figured out. They're going to have to make a change, at least, I think, at Kiko Alonso's spot on linebacker. I don't know a lot about Flores, to be honest. He's only been doing this for 1 year, calling plays for 1 year. Well, I guess I do know about Flores in that New England got a little bit more aggressive this season mm-hmm. than they were with Matt Patricia the last couple years. I don't know how much of that's Flores and how much of that's Belichick pushing the buttons. This will be interesting to find. I want to know who his offensive coordinator is going to be, too. That's going to be a big deal, and that could be a revealing one as well.
That's a big deal. It feels like it's going to be at least a mini rebuild for them because I think they have to sort of accept that Ryan Tannehill is not the guy there, and Lord knows who they're going to get to replace him. This upcoming offseason. But yeah, they have some building blocks on defense. So Flores has some stuff to work with on his side of the ball between a Minkah Fitzpatrick and a Xavien Howard and if they can get Raekwon McMillan going a little bit more in his second full season. You got some pieces there.
Yeah, you do. You do. They got good Taylor. Run stuffers too. Yeah, Zach Taylor.
Yes.
My guy is Zach Taylor.
Zach Taylor to Cincinnati. Andy, by the way, you can read about the Taylor brothers on the MMQB. That is on the internet. You can Google it. That's everyone does it. Andy wrote a piece about Zach Taylor and Press Taylor, the Eagles quarterbacks coach. But Zach Taylor to the Bengals is the reported hire. What's Andy Dalton? Is Andy Dalton? Do you think Andy Dalton is his guy? We've kind of Andy Dalton has lived in that area where you kind of want an upgrade. You want to upgrade, but you also don't have this, you know, this feeling like, oh, you have to go get someone right now. You can't possibly play Andy Dalton for another year, although maybe it's reaching that point.
It's a chance to get out if you want to get out. What's his contract? I'm looking up his contract now. They can no dead cap, so they can have him for $16.2 million this year, or they cannot have him and have it cost nothing. I mean, they can cut him for free. So Joe Flacco's out there. Andy Dalton's 31. He's right in his prime. What would you do, Gary?
When they hired Zach Taylor, I thought this was – I don't want to say I thought it was a sign, but I thought it opened the door to them going and getting, you know, a quarterback they like in this year's draft. Dwayne Haskins of Ohio State is probably the number one guy on the board, but we'll see.
You think they're going to go with a really unknown rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback?
Yeah.
Behind an average offensive line, but probably below yep. average offensive line.
To me, I think this is a we're going to, you know, we moved on from Marvin Lewis. It's time for a new coach-quarterback marriage.
Okay. I think Taylor's going to do the McVay stuff. That's part of the reason he has a job. And it's going to be important that he has experienced assistants around him. I expect he'll do that. I have no idea who his D coordinator will be, but that's another one that's important to know. And I'll say this about Dalton. When the design is comfortable and it works, he's an efficient quarterback. If he were in the Rams system playing the Jared Goff role right now, I think the Rams would still be 85 to 90% of what they are right now. I think Goff's better and more gifted than Dalton, but I think if they had those kind of scenarios where you get the play action, it's a defined game, and Dalton, I've heard, is very sharp in the pre-snap phase. It's post-snap that you don't know what you're getting sometimes. And you don't know what you're getting when things break down around him is usually what causes the not knowing what I'm getting. But you minimize a lot of that with the McVay scheme. That's the attractiveness of it. And I think Dalton could do okay in that. I don't know if there's – but maybe that doesn't matter if you think, well, all right, okay means he gets us to 9-7 again and we still got to find a QB. Yeah. I don't know. You got to – but who – if you're not getting Dalton, who are you getting? You going to go find a quarterback just because you want someone new, or do you want to go get the right
yep.
quarterback?
Well, I think you want it to be both of those things. I don't know if the Bengals see themselves as being in a position to compete in that division right now. I as a matter of fact, I will just say they should not see themselves as being in a position to compete in that division. I'm not saying they can't go 8-8 and sort of hang around, but the way the Browns are going and what the Ravens are building on and the fact that the Steelers probably still have, you know, let's say at least two or three more years with Ben Roethlisberger, I don't think the Bengals can win that division. It's not impossible, but I don't think they should expect to win that division in the next 3 or 4 years. I think they have to start building toward something a little bit long term.
All right. I'm going to devil's advocate it, though.
Okay.
The Bengals can sit around and say the Steelers just missed the playoffs and they're imploding. It's a sinking ship, and right now it's under more water than it was when they were missing the playoffs to begin with because they've got this Antonio Brown albatross, and that's the situation of the Steelers. The Browns went 7-8-1. Let's not lose our minds. They went 7-8-1, and now they're going with an unproven first-time head coach who lost a bunch of the staff that was here last year. He's bringing in his own guys, so maybe they'll be even better. But it's not the same Browns as it was a year ago, and more film is going to be out there on Baker Mayfield now. And here we go. It's another Browns coaching transition. The Ravens, we don't know anything about them because we don't know if Lamar Jackson can play or not. When they asked him to pass, they got bounced from the playoffs pretty thoroughly. So, yeah, the Bengals might be the worst team in the AFC North, but I don't feel like it's not like an AFC South situation where you say the Colts are looking like they're going to go 13-3 next year, and the Texans have playmakers on both sides of the ball, and they have quarterbacks. You know, I don't know if it's the same deal.
You could look at it that way. If I were looking at it, that is not how I look at it. But I think you're, I think that's glass 95% of the way full when it's really only half full kind of thinking. That's a terrible metaphor. I'm sorry about that, but I think the Bengals should be more realistic with their thinking going forward. I think they lack playmakers on defense. I mean, I don't know. Do you think AJ Dalton? Do you think Andy Dalton could be a quarterback who can lead a 30 plus points per game offense, which I think is what you need with the shortcomings they have on defense?
Well, if you put it that way, I guess not. But that's why I want to know who Zach Taylor's D coordinator will be as well. I think they need it's time for a system change on the defense is what's stale. That's where we ought to be talking about that and who Zach Taylor can get. And I'm sure he's already got a guy in mind because they probably wouldn't give a no-name head coach the job if he didn't have a guy in mind. I want to know who his defensive coordinator will be.
All right. Mailbag. I know I promised a bigger mailbag, and that was foolish of me because we're going to do a fairly quick one. However, I will promise once again because I'm going to guess, Andy, our show next week where we break down the Pro Bowl, that's probably like 35 minutes, and then we'll have like another 50 minutes to fill. So
I'm not talking 35 minutes about the Pro Bowl.
We will have plenty of time to take mailbag questions. Please keep them coming. We have a bunch. We have a backup. Thank you for being patient, people who sent them in. And not that we guarantee we'll answer everyone, but we got some good questions that we've been meaning to answer. So send them to talkback@themmqb.com, or you can send them straight to us on Twitter or on Facebook. Two quick ones. One of them is actually from Ryan Taylor, one of our researchers, who he works very hard for us during the year.
We will
answer this one for him. Ryan asks, why are teams so convinced that keeping/hiring QB guys works for a head coach? Dirk Cutter was kept because of his relationship with Jameis, and that situation fell apart. Kingsbury won't have anything major with Baker and Pat, as the only positive outlier is... I'm not sure what you wrote there, Ryan.
He hasn't won anything major with Baker and Pat.
Oh, at Texas Tech.
Yes, yes.
Yes, there we go. Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes, by the way. just a little slow on the uptake. And the only positive outlier is McVay, who is universally acknowledged as a coaching freak. It seems like teams have to talk themselves into hiring these guys when more established coaches, Eberflus, Fangio, etc., are out there and can hire decent offensive coordinators who are available. Nathaniel Hackett to Green Bay, for example. So there you go. I mean, the basic answer is everyone wants to find their coach quarterback pairing, and you can't lose your guy if your offensive coordinator is basically your de facto offensive head coach, and your head coach is a defensive guy. Someone can hire away that offensive coordinator, but you know, if he's your head coach, he's probably sticking around as your head coach.
That's what it is. But the most quarterback head coach pairing, Belichick and Brady, right? We talk about all the time who's responsible for the success. Nobody's ever actually stopped and said, wait a minute. Bill Belichick's not coaching the quarterbacks. He's not whispering into Tom Brady's ear. So we probably do get carried away with it a little bit. But your point, Gary, is a good one. You don't want someone snatching your – it's coach. Well, the coach matters. The system matters. Those two things go hand in hand, and that's what relates to the quarterback. And we learned so blatantly with the Rams how important that is, because we saw what Goff was when he didn't have it. But, you know, Goff was a rookie that same year when he didn't have McVay. So I hear what Ryan's saying, but what's the alternative? Like, okay, you don't like the LaFleur hiring? Who should they hire instead? Like, what's
the alternative? It's very difficult to sit here and say, well, Matt Eberflus, you know, you'd win Super Bowls with Matt Eberflus and say, it's very difficult to project what these guys will be. There's so many variables that come into this. Not only the roster, but how do you get along with the roster architect, your general manager, whoever might be putting the roster together. You know, simple stuff like, did you have a season full of injuries? Stuff happens. Is basically the answer there, but I will say, and I, you know, when I was looking at last week and the coaches who were still alive in the league last week, I don't think except for Sean McVay, I don't think you would have put any of those coaches in the win the press conference category when they were hired, and we see that time and time again. Whether it's the, you know, there's sort of a rush to hire guys so that you can tell everyone that you got your guy. Repeatedly over the last couple of years, the last guy hired has ended up being fantastic, whether it's Frank Reich or Doug Peterson, who everyone panned when he was hired because he wasn't even a play caller at his last stop. And you can go down the line like that.
Dick LeBeau is one of the great coaches of all time, and he's maybe the best defensive coordinator. He's right up there. I think he ought to be, and I know he's in the Hall of Fame as a player. I think coordinators deserve consideration for the Hall of Fame. They do more of the football coaching than head coaches a lot of the time. The point I'm about to make, Dick LeBeau as a head coach, he spent 3 years in Cincinnati. He went 12-33. The head coaching job is very different than the defensive coordinator job. So like Matt Eberflus, who I've been over the moon about as a coordinator, and I'm saying he ought to be hired as a head coach, I think he'll be a pretty good head coach based on what I know about him, but I don't know that for sure, and there's no way anybody can know that for sure because we don't know how Matt Eberflus is as a CEO. He's never had – there's no job that replicates the head coaching job in the NFL. So some of the best football minds in the NFL are not good head coaches still, and some of the head coaches out there are not the best football minds. We have to remember they're two different jobs.
Yeah, that is very, very true. One more question here, Andy. This is from Eddie. I don't know if you're going to bite on this. This has always just fascinated me when I've watched really any sport. Why does CJ Anderson never get himself up after a run? He demands his teammates lift him every single time. If they're slow to lift, he does not take a hint and wants to be lifted. Which is, it's always funny to me because I guess on one hand, okay, the running back does end the play on the ground and all the linemen don't necessarily do it, but it's kind of like, oh, I just blocked for you. Like my job was really hard. I don't want to come over and now expend more energy helping you up.
Well, just about every single run C.J. Anderson has had for the Rams so far has been between 5 and 12 yards downfield, and that's just what he keeps doing. So he's in position to ask for help. What I want to see is if he breaks one away for 45 or 50 yards and then lays on the turf waiting for the linemen to make their way down, and then if he asks for help up, I'll think Eddie has a point here. But we don't know if C.J. Anderson's like that yet. He's only running near bodies right now.
He gets 40 yards downfield and he's like a turtle on his back waiting for someone to come flip him over. That I'd enjoy.
Or an armadillo. Have you ever driven through Texas and seen the armadillos on the side of the road that are dead but perfectly preserved? And what you realize is they just fell over on their back?
Wow, no. I didn't know that was a thing. That's incredibly sad.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew armadillos were a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I assume that's what happened. I saw them like that on a vacation, and my dad said that must have been what happened. But now that I think about it, my dad, you know, I love him, but he doesn't know any more than the next guy, and I don't. So maybe that's not what's happening. But it looks like when you go on the road, there's all these really good-looking armadillos that are dead on their backs in Texas, in certain parts of Texas.
Wow. Now, I've been to Texas a couple times. I never spotted the armadillos. It's a sad metaphor to end the show on. But yeah,
no, it's not
know.
A metaphor. I'm telling you, this is what I saw. These armadillos were dead on their back.
Isn't it a metaphor for something, though? The state of the journalism industry, Andy? Is it something like that?
All right,
that's a wrap. We'll be back on Monday, and of course we'll be back next Thursday for the Deep Dive show, and we need your questions. So send those questions in. Yeah. We have stuff to talk about. but you can also tell us what to talk about. It's that kind of a relationship that we have. For now, thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, who make us sound smart. And thank you, as always, to producer Shelby Royston and the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good every show. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to the MMQB Deep Dive NFL Podcast. You are the best. And I will be back in your feed Monday morning breaking down the conference championship games. We'll probably do a little mini Super Bowl look ahead, very mini Super Bowl look ahead, coming off the Sunday games. And obviously, we will look ahead to the off seasons for the two teams who are not victorious on Sunday. If you go back one in your feed, you get the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, joined by Jenny Rentis, and this week, Bette Marston, breaking down some of the big news from around the league. And tomorrow, Friday, Jimmy Traina and Scott Gramling and myself on the MMQB Gambling Show. Our hot streak got broken, but we're still like 62%. We're still like 62% over the last month, even though we went like something it was bloodshed last week. It was like 1-14 or something like that. But still, 62% over the last month. It's a long game. That's how you got to play it. Get all those shows when you subscribe to the MMQB Podcast Network wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, radio.com/10things, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys Monday morning.